Welcome to the Productivity Mastery Podcast, presented to you by myself, Stoyan Yankov, productivity and performance coach, keynote and TEDx speaker, and co-author of the Perform Methodology, and the book Perform, the Unsexy Truth About Startup Success. Join me on a journey to discover what some of the world's leading professionals do to be more productive, create peak performing teams, and build successful global companies. New episodes weekly. And now, enjoy today's episode. Good morning, everybody, and good morning to my guest, Inga Stasiolionite. How are you this morning, Inga?
Good morning. Thank you for having me here. I'm very excited to chat about this really interesting topics with you, especially because I love the work what you do and about the productivity mastery topics what you talk.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, and many thanks to my co-author Cristobal Alonso for connecting us. He watched your speech, I believe, a couple of weeks ago, and he was very fascinated by your performance on stage and all your stories, and he recommended that we get in touch, and I was immediately impressed by your stories, by your mindset, by the way that you approach leadership. And for the audience who's just tuning in right now, you are in for a treat, guys. This morning, or if you're watching or listening to the podcast later in the day, you're in for a treat. The lady I'm talking to today, Inga Stasiolionite, and I keep on repeating her name because it's an easy name. She's an Olympian athlete turning to an elite performance and leadership coach. She's working with companies such as Salesforce, Facebook, HubSpot, Oracle. She's the one, as I understand, leading the first MIT Sports Entrepreneurship Bootcamp. She's smashing it, and I'm very excited to learn from her about mental toughness, about leadership, about how do you master your mind and perform at the highest level. So welcome to the pod, Inga.
I love these topics to experiment with myself when I was performing as Olympian and then later as a founder. And then to share that experience to support really ambitious leaders and the high performers to do better, to do bigger, to do faster and more effective way. So I love these topics.
and as always, we would like to invite everybody who's listening live to the podcast. Make sure to tune in and post your questions in the comments. We'll be happy to take some questions. But I want to start, Inga, with the beginning of your story. At least I mentioned to the audience you're an Olympian athlete. And could you give us the short version of a story? How did you become? Most people are practicing sports all their life, and then, you know, they're aiming for this big event. As I understood, for you, it was a little bit of a different story.
Yes, I had no idea what there is another life of sports and the Olympics. I was just aiming to do good in school, to do good in university, to get a good job, to have a good family. And that was my vision for life. However, one day to math class, the man with mustache came in and he said, "Inga, you will be a javelin thrower." I had no idea what that meant, who this man is. But he was...
Wait, hold on a second. A man with a mustache came in and said, "Inga, you're going to be..." How?
It was this random. He was a national... a Lithuanian throwing coach. And the system in Lithuania at the time was when coaches, and actually it is even now, when they go through the schools and look for the talented bodies. So to see if they would like to participate in those sports. So from my previous school, he heard what I did certain tests quite well in physical education. And I also at that time played volleyball for the national team, so it was a perfect sauce for him to recruit me because a lot of volleyball players can throw javelin, and he really wanted me to try. My mom really didn't want me to go to this sport because she thought it will take a lot of weightlifting and it will deform my body somehow. So, and she doesn't like anything that's not healthy. And for her, it looked like too intense, all these aims and then goals. But my coach was so persistent and he was so in love with this event as javelin throwing. I got just that bug from him to fall in love with sport. And also he showed me, he was the first person to show me what job is not only for the paycheck. It is also could be something what you truly love, enjoy, cannot wait to go to work for.
Love it. And so you decided, you know what, I'm gonna go all in. I'm going to do training, practice. How did the next few years look for you? And by the way, how long did it take from this moment for you to make it to the Olympic Games?
I started in 1999. I participated in Olympics 2008. I qualified for other Olympics, but for the first one in Sydney, I was a little bit too young or inexperienced, so they didn't take me. And other throwers were better to represent. And second time for Athens Olympics, I got injured, so I could not go. And then for the third one, that was already like if I like that was my last chance to ever compete in Olympics or not, because I mean, it takes really long time and a lot of luck, also besides a lot of hard work to participate in such a big events and then to do well in such a big events as in anywhere in life.
Tell us a little bit about the story behind, like, what does it really take to make it to the Olympic Games when it comes to effort and discipline and persistence?
Really understanding how the body develops, how the mind develops, how the emotions develop, and what are the demands to compete at really high level when you face to face meet exactly the same people as you. And some of them maybe even with bigger talents, and maybe some of them are so much stronger than you are in certain parts, and how to face that and still be able to show up and do even better. Everything is possible. But knowing how you function, what are your limits is very, very important. Knowing when to stop is very important. Actually, all those motivational titles or names what are so popular, they are all opposite in high performance. Like, do go harder, but whatever is very important, get more serious. When you have to work when everybody is sleeping, like all of those are so destructive. They have like a little bit of piece of truth. However, it depends where you're at and how you do. So, learning to know your limits to be able to develop in healthy way and be it. This is what leads to sustained performance, and this is what you need. That sustainability, because it takes so many years to reach that success, what matters the most.
Thanks for sharing that. There's so much of these, content out there right now, and people are confused at what to look for. And sometimes this, go even harder, don't sleep, don't, it's like, well,
Or never
yes, you want to work hard. I mean, you want to do your best. You got to show up. There's no excuses, right? Like, you don't, there's a fair balance, but at the same time, it needs to be sustainable. You're not doing it for a day. You're doing it for hopefully for years. So if you want to sustain the level of performance and the level of well-being and actually being happy on the journey, sometimes you need to push yourself a little harder. And that's the truth. In business, you might have a product launch. You might have a very big event. So maybe you have to push yourself a little harder, but you need to still keep in mind, hey, we're in for the long run.
Defining what's harder means, right? Like how we show up, that's the key to considering, not just winging it, like, oh, I have a meeting, or I have this presentation, or I have this conversation, right? Like, but like, how do I need to perform not only with the content, but as a person, how to show up, with what kind of attitude, with what kind of voice, with what kind of posture, like physical energy, what we come into the event, that matters a lot.
And I'll be super happy to dive deep into that in just a few minutes. But before that, I would like to hear from you about currently you're a coach. You've been coaching athletes, a lot of leaders, business people. But I wonder, were there some coaches in your career that had a huge impact on you as a leader? And what were some of the main learnings from these coaches?
I cannot imagine my life and myself without my coaches. And I still have a lot of mentors and coaches because please tell me somebody if there is any better system when to evolve or develop faster and better without a coach. And I was just sharing before joining this session how I injured myself. And it was precisely because I was a bit cocky to think what I can learn something on my own from YouTube.
So just for the audience, you injured your hand, right? For like,
yes, my elbow. So I have a tennis elbow now, which I'm waiting till I'm going to be able to extend my arm and bend and brush my teeth. this the coach, the first one who discovered me, he was huge influence on my understanding what's possible to do with the life. And he discovered what I have a lot of resources, what I can work with and have a lot of successes with. And when I arrived to University of Southern California, this is where I met another coach, Dan Lang. Then this coach also showed me in different way how I can develop myself. And it was a very rocky road from beginning, how we interacted, how we build the trust, because I really didn't like his system. I didn't like his approach. Everything was so foreign and I was telling them to his face.
What was it that you didn't like about his approach?
Because when I arrived, he started asking me, how do I feel? And I said, like, who cares? Tell me what to do. Like, literally, like, I think so at 19, it was the first time when some adult asked me how I'm feeling. But because nobody asked me that, all my life, people were telling me what to do and how I should feel and what I should think and how I should be. I thought that was natural way to follow. So yes, it was really uncomfortable. And at that time for me, stupid question.
What would be your answer if they ask you today?
So how I'm feeling today, I'm feeling settled. I'm feeling inspired. I'm feeling a lot of energy finally. But asking this question daily, and it became my practice, absolutely. And this is the most important question to ask before anything what we do. If we go into the performance talk, before, like how athletes have warm-ups, like none of the athletes gonna go perform without warm-up. And it is because, and this is what separates professionals from amateurs, warm-up. Warm-up is preparation to perform, because you know if you don't prepare, you're going to injure yourself and then you're done. and how the preparation and this warm up for the leaders looks like is just checking in with yourself, where I am and how I am mentally, physically, emotionally, what will be the demands, and how to transition to get to that state, but I will setting myself up for success for that situation. You can see actors, you can see presenters, professional presenters, how much time they take to prepare voice exercises, how they go through the text. None of them, even the, it is their profession winging it. None of them. It goes so much preparation to wing it.
Yeah, so, the improvisation is the best when you already prepared so well that you can improvise something on top of everything that you've been mastering for weeks or months or so on, right?
And those are the stages what I also presented. First, when you prepare, understanding what is the success for that situation, when you define it, you go through those check-ins of how are you, and then you have lots of techniques how to transition to where you need to be, because especially in my sport, in individual sport, you cannot be benched. Like the date is set, so it doesn't matter if you're sick, if you're not in the mood, if you have a headache, you have to perform. Like, that's it. Nobody gonna bench you and somebody else replace you. No coach gonna do it for you. So knowing how to self-control, self-manage, that's the key to be able to perform in this question of how you're feeling, and learning how to answer it in a really honest way, and how to use that information. And this is what we learn with my clients, is the key to go to that second stage of what I call it focused freedom. So focus comes from the preparation, and freedom comes from where you trust yourself, the time, and you go based on your intuition. And that's only time when you can be free.
I love it. I love it. Would you also recommend, maybe let me just reframe it. Do we ask this question enough in businesses? How are you feeling? Not just to ourselves, but also to our colleagues, to our direct reports, to our managers. Or would you think we should ask it more?
Yes, this question is a good one. However, it has to be also set up, the trust build up, right? And how we use that information, how everybody feeling. Like in America, everybody feels asks this question, everyone, like, how are you doing? However, not when I came back from US after first year and started employing the same greeting in Lithuania, I was like, started hearing true answers, and it's like, oh.
Because Americans say, how are you doing? And then the answer is, how are you doing, right?
Yeah, exactly. So we need to be ready for the answer and know what to do with that answer, right? So otherwise, this question becomes greeting, like as an air. But to instill the culture where we respect what we feel and we learn how to address it and what to do it, it is very important. With my leaders, what we discuss is when employees come to vent for them, how to handle those situations, right? Mm. So you open up the space for your employees, for your team to express their emotions. However, you really need to be knowledgeable not to take all of it to yourself or to get stuck with the person. And then this is where the coaching comes in, where you know what to do, where you learn what to do with those situations, how to redirect, how to manage those emotions, how to learn why those emotions happen and what to do with them.
Do you have any example or a story to share of situation maybe with your team or with the team that you've been coaching, just for the audience to, you know, to imagine it even better?
So in everyday situations this happens. Like, for example, for me personally, when I'm tired, I literally say no to everything. Like even for the nicest dessert, what I truly love, I would say no, because that's my first reaction. So asking myself how I'm feeling, I'm tired. So I know the tendency, I will be saying no to absolutely everything. And that's not good. So when I interact with people, I say like, I'm a little bit tired and maybe irritable. So please bear with me. I will try to manage myself, but also please let me know if I'm going off the track. With others, we can name it like, I see the situation is very sensitive to you. Do you want to discuss it now or do you want to find a better time for it?
And then this is so good.
So especially when we move through really scheduled, really busy day, we cannot address it maybe meaningfully, that situation. So it is necessary to address it, but in the right time with the right kind of attention. Because if you will be telling me something upsetting or something meaningful for you and I will be just scrolling or doing my email, it completely not gonna serve any purpose, that question.
I love it. It's more like developing conscious leadership, being more aware.
Yes, aware of ourselves and also what kind of attitude and energy we bring to the conversation, and also meeting the people where they are. And this is very, very important also for the teams, understanding how much energy do we have to deal with what. And that project or meeting, how much energy it will require, and how can we help each other to meet that challenge. But not saying like you are at 20, and it's like now you have to push to 100. Okay, you are 20, I will bring those 80 extra this time. But let's make sure what you recover for the next time so we can help each other.
Where is the balance for you? I mean, you've been an Olympian athlete. You are performing at the highest level as a speaker, as a coach. Where for you is the balance between I need to give it my best, put in all the effort and just, you know, this competitiveness and the other side of I need to care for myself, be in the moment, go with my guts, you know, realize what I'm feeling, not at my best, so I can kind of make a pause. How do you find this kind of balance so you perform at your highest level sustainably?
They go together. And I really like what you added, sustainably. Because to perform at the highest level, it never going to happen what you're going to do it for whole day, for whole week. However, understanding what in that moment, what it's required and how much capacity you have and what it means that best, defining before going into the event or even sometimes during the event, adjusting it, that definition, that what we call it optimal performance. Peak performance is optimal performance. Peak performance is a flow. Grind also exists as a peak performance, however, only for the new things what we do. And we need to distinguish the things what we do daily and what that means as a good flow, good performance from us, what it demands. And also when we do something new, we cannot do too many new things because anything new requires a lot of energy from us. So what we do with clients also go through the calendar. We define what are those moments of peak performance when it really matters for them. So is this meeting with CEO, or is this round table, or is this with the problematic employee, what it needs to be that conversation? Okay, at those times, I need to be at my best energy, at my most capacity. How my day should be and how can I prepare, save the energy so I would be at those points. So we, before that, like maybe we're going to do something automatic tasks, what doesn't require a lot of. So we consciously saving our energy for that conversation.
I hope everybody's listening to this one, because so many of us we stuck meeting after meeting after meeting, and 3:30 p.m. we have the most important meeting of the day, maybe the board meeting or the meeting with this important client, but we haven't taken a breath. And you go into the meeting and you're not at your best. And maybe, just maybe, you could have taken 30 minutes off to go for a walk or to do administrative task or just to prepare for the meeting and get a, you know, a breath of fresh air. So hopefully people can take this information now and say, you know what, I need to maybe reconsider the way I do my schedule. So I can really identify what are the things that matter most from my day. What are the most important meetings? Or if you're, you know, in your case, you've been competing at your highest level. When you're throwing, it's probably the time that you want to be at your best. You know, you're still sustainably preparing and doing all the stuff, but you got to be really in the flow, focused, and give it your all.
Otherwise, what's the point? What's the point just to participate when... And this is what's the most upsetting, right? Like, because we have so much capacity and capabilities, and when we don't set up ourselves for success, everything just goes wasted. Like, you show up, and then you cannot take advantage of yourself or the situation at all.
You know what I want to ask you?
Confidence goes down, and then to believe in what you can do and what's possible completely becomes hopeless. And from that to recover, that takes time. It's funny too, like I mentioned you before too, this is why I do sports too, and I catch myself with those concepts quite often. I'm super tired. It's like third set of the tennis match, and I'm playing against opponent, and it is my last game to serve. If I win, I win the match. I'm so tired, and I know what serves require a lot of for me to focus and attention, and I just don't have that capacity. And it's like, I am just going to wing it, like whatever, and then we will see what happens. But then I stop myself before going with the ball. It's like, no, if I just going to take a little bit of few minutes to set myself up, to visualize what would be that good serve for me, to take get into that rhythm, then I would need to run like a headless chicken and try to save the ball. If I will take just few seconds before and go against this initial wish, just like, oh, I'm too tired, just let's finish this. Like, no. Like, you're almost at the winning point. You just need to take self-control off of those few seconds. And then, like, okay, I set it up, and then I serve ace. And I don't need to run like a chicken after every ball.
So you took a pause, you centered yourself, maybe close your eyes and just imagine that the bow is going in. Mm-hmm. Take a few breaths, you calm yourself, and now doesn't mean you're going to win for sure, but your probability of winning is going to be higher.
You're setting yourself up for best performance every single time. You need to
wise people, you know, ancient Greeks and so on, they were like, you know, Chinese warriors, they will all say you win the battle within, and the warrior who wins is the one that wins the battle within, the mental battle, because at the highest level there could be a difference, but I would imagine that it's the results of the athletes is very close very often. In any kind of sport, right? It's very close, but how you conduct yourself and how do you manage to remain mentally when you have all the expectations, when, I don't know, 4 years you're preparing for this Olympic event and it's just a matter of seconds, your performance, you have the big crowd, all the expectations, all the cameras. I don't think people understand the level of pressure that's on two athletes to perform. And then you have to remain in your zone, and you know, I'm curious to hear what were your tools when you were competing at the Olympic Games to give it your very best under such a pressure.
And I didn't give my best, and this is why I became a coach, because even in the post what I mentioned, what I understood how much mental preparation and focus to that has potential and towards your success and how much it matters. And for the Olympics, I was so well prepared physically and technically. In the warm-ups, I was throwing right before going into the bird's nest. It was so flawless, like it was perfect. All those marks, what I had in the warm-up area, they were worthy of the finals, easily, all of them. And it was so natural for me, like everything was perfectly settled. But I had one thought. What completely, and I knew that, but I for a few weeks I could not resolve it at all because it was such a strong logic for me. And the thought was, it does not matter how far I throw, all my competitors will beat that mark. Even I throw world record, they will beat that mark because they're better prepared than me. It just does not matter. And I knew this thought, it really like occupied me. And I could not get rid of it because it was so logical. And I went to throw, and I could feel literally how my body is just locked. And I tried to loosen up and do all those techniques, but this thought, it was so present in me during the competition. And after the competition, we were talking about, okay, how was this experience for everybody else? I found out what Kara Peterson, she was throwing with her ligaments torn. She was literally there for experience, for her to prepare for the next competitions. And she actually succeeded in the next, in last World Championships, not this one, but 2 years before, she got a silver medal finally. But all those experiences would build up to understand the environment, understand yourself so you can manage your thoughts and then being able to show what you're capable of. Because I didn't show what I was capable of, and nothing physically and technically changed in that half an hour. It was literally half an hour difference between where I was performing so easily my best marks and to what I showed at Olympics. It was completely not that representative, but I call it amazing experience for me, amazing disappointment for me, and that amazing stance because I was able to dial in into this experience to build the life that I'm living now, and it's amazing.
if I had a time machine and I transport to 3 months prior to the Olympic Games, what would you do to train yourself on mastering the mental game?
And this is what I do with athletes and with leaders. We literally, like, what are your belief system is? Like, what are your thoughts? So if I would have that thought, it doesn't matter what I throw, everybody else way much better prepared than me. And that thought was coming because I was working full time. And I didn't participate in the training camps before that. I literally trained in between my work hours.
That's amazing.
Qualify and
that's
to
impressive.
Thank you. Yes. So this is where that logic came from. But the logic would come in and say, like, what does it mean to perform the best for me? And how much that matters, like how much I can use competitors' energy to actually to perform for myself, right? Because it was so much focus in this thought to external factors, what is not in my control, right? Like, so I completely forgot to focus on something what I truly can control. So that was a big difference. But also, life happens for everybody at any time. So assumption that everybody is perfectly prepared is also wrong. And then we all going to have our lowest points or highest points, but how can we bring up the best from each other?
And by the way, you had another story with your Belarusian friend. As you're talking about life happens for everybody, maybe you wanna share with us this story as well.
Yes, in addition to this thought conundrum, I was competing with the friend who threw javelin and her shoulder came from the socket during the Olympics qualifying session. And then she ran to me asking for help because she didn't know English well. And I had this dilemma, like it's like 10 years of preparation for this moment for me to perform at Olympic Games. And it was really hard also for me to qualify. I had to duel into this competition. And here also I have a friend who, competitor, I need to help. So lots of moral dilemmas, what to do in that moment. But because I knew friendships are forever, competition is just one moment, and I am already like tanking it. Or I will maybe have time to prepare it how much I can. But first, let's get her to medical attention. So I found some assistance from the Chinese team to help my friend. But yes, lots of things happen during the major things what you never would expect. But you need to know how to react to them and then what it would align to your values and to your purpose. But sometimes it doesn't. But it is then very, very important learning moment.
I love this story. There's a storyteller, a screenwriter called Robert McKee. He wrote a book called Story, one of the sort of like the Bible of storytelling and so on. And in his book, he mentioned, I'm not sure about the exact quote, but it was around true character shows up in times of a crisis, in times of a stress. You know, what you value, what matters, shows up when you're exposed to a critical situation like this. You've been training for 10 years to make it to the Olympic Games. Now, if you go and help your friend, that may take you off board, so you're not going to be focused, and you might risk the chance of qualifying for the Olympics. But which one is more important, right? You got to make this choice, and life gives us all these choices. How do you show up?
I think so. It's represents which belief system is stronger, right? Or you trained yourself, or what life trained you to how to react to those moments. But our character is as a mold, and like we are able to remold it. Like I was completely different person when I arrived to America. It completely reshaped me, and based on what kind of people I meet, this is how they keep reshaping me. So it's okay, like if we fail during those moments, but if we don't learn, if we don't adjust, if we don't create ourselves possibilities to grow, then this is who we are. But we definitely have a chance to be and do better.
And I've seen exceptional transformations in people. And exceptional transformations when it comes to the way they see the world, the way they believe in themselves, the way they show up with courage, with bravery. And as you said, it's this mold, right? Everybody can make a choice and say, I want to grow. I want to expand on my beliefs and the stories I believe in. And I want to start installing in my operational system new stories and beliefs that will support me on the journey. And of course, that's where therapy, coaching, consulting, you know, working with professionals is definitely going to accelerate this process. But it's just so inspiring to know that there's so many people that have done these transformations. You can do that too. You can do that too. You just have to commit. Your perception about the world as of today doesn't have to be forever. Everything changes and everything transforms. But you got to do the work as well. How difficult do you think is for somebody to make a transformation Is that a, you know, a painful period? Is that a painful kind of journey? What is your, you know, observation for many years of being a practitioner?
It depends on what kind of subject, right? And how deeply we believe in that thought. The more belief we have, the stronger belief we have, the harder to change, because as the characters, our egos, this is what we define ourselves by. So for us to change that, it is very painful and process, and we need to know also how we change, how we learn, to be aware of that, because in practice, as an athlete, you always try new things. So you exercise where you tried to break something, what you already know, to rebuild something stronger and better, right, on top of it. But when I arrived to USC and the coach asked me how completely change the definition of success, how to achieve it, like instead of person who's telling me what to do, now the person tells me what I want to do. And I don't trust that answer. And I don't trust that path to success. And it was not, I was not buying it for 3 years. Like, no way. But life really pushed me to the corner where I had no choice, because my coach in Lithuania passed. So I could not train with him. I tried to find somebody similar approach. Logistically was impossible. Then I thought, okay, I already know so much, I will train myself. And guess what? I overtrained twice. So whole year was ruined for me being able somehow to recover from overtraining. And then I had no choice. And I said, fine, let's do your system. I will try to answer this stupid question. however, like knowing our moments and how through the different types of belief systems, what it takes for us to change it and to keep training ourselves to question our beliefs, question our dogmas and values, it is a daily exercise is what we need to do, because in one way, it is good that we have strong beliefs, because this is what holds us as a person, as a character. Otherwise, we're not going to find our place in the world and to be able to have confidence to function. However, at the same time, when we set ourselves up, when we interact with different ideas, we need to have that flexibility. This is what was my experience, but maybe there is something else.
I listened to an interview that you did, another interview, and it was kind of a fun moment to realize that you initially, when you started having a job, you thought that everybody has a coach, and you were surprised that people don't have coaches in the workplace. Can you talk about that?
That's only kind of learning what until I went to work, professional development what I experienced, and this feedback back and forth for me to keep setting up for success was so natural and so well producing results. So when I came to workplace and then they said, okay, yeah, just see what you can do, it's like I knew that I have a lot of potential and I can bring lots of value, but I had no idea what to do and how to function in the company, in this environment. And nobody was there to lead because everybody was so busy. And then it was good from university, I built up the network of good mentors. So then my mentors helped me to navigate the work environment, but I had to go externally to find that help for myself.
Yeah, but it also makes so much sense. I personally used to play football and train, and to it's more like, you know, I've been a playmaker. I played high school, prior to high school, then university, in the college team, in the Danish series, like, and you know, you have a coach, right? Like you go to practice and it's like, hey, don't hit it like that. You're, you know, pass more. Like, you know, you get feedback constantly and immediately. And I can imagine your surprise of like just day to day being with a coach, just getting this feedback and accelerated performance. Like you're saving time of not doing the wrong thing. Same thing, you have a personal trainer, you go to the gym. You know, it's so much different. It's so much more effective. Sorry?
And you don't get injured.
You don't get injured. Yeah, show the boy. Yeah, but you know, that's such a good learning for all the business people out there, right? On the one side, you know, maybe it's about time for you to consider getting a coach that will help you, where you can vent off, you can share your challenges, you can get a bit of a guidance and even mentorship in some cases. But at the same time, how can we as leaders provide the best environment for our people to thrive, to perform, to have all the guidance and support, but without taking away too much of ownership and responsibility, right? Not being too protective. And that I think that's another balance. I wonder what's your take on that, and what's your recommendation to lead? How do we find this balance in between, you know, I want you to perform, I want to give you a lot of freedom, but you can't give too much freedom as happened to you, right? Like, go and do stuff. So where is the place where we have to go?
Ah, such a good question. And this is what we work on daily. Because what I train my leader clients is coaching also skill sets, right? Like how we meet people. As a leader, that's your job to facilitate the culture, the standards, to set them up, that energy, that attitude towards how we approach our work, how we reach the results, how we go through the struggles, how we approach mistakes when people do mistakes, right? Like, do we judge or do we evaluate? Do we support or do we shame? And in those conversations, it's very important to see if the, and we learn through the leaders, if the person needs information or the confidence to do something, right? And in that conversation, we can see like through lots of questions. And this is why questions are so powerful, right? This is when we give agency to other person to choose what they want to do and how they want to do it. And you are as a support system to confirm or to provide maybe new ideas or choices for that person. And this is what I do as a coach to my leaders. But the key is for them to start creating. It's the same as with my second coach, for me to start creating my own agency, my own accountability for my actions. And this is what leader cannot take away, is that person's commitment to success, commitment to the actions. And this has to be developed together by knowing each other's responsibilities, by agreeing what are the next steps, by agreeing what happens if it's failing. It's gonna fail for sure, 100%, whatever we're gonna do, because it's new. And we only assume what will gonna get us to success. But knowing how we're gonna be dealing with that failure, we can already talk about it from beginning. It's not about like what we failed and we kind of like creating this possibility to fail, but we anticipate what it is a possibility, but how we're gonna react and how we deal with it to learn. Because the failure shows what we missed some information or something new happened that we didn't expect. Maybe it is a huge opportunity. Maybe it's good, but the situation is happening because we didn't see the fastest way to get, even faster way how to get to the point what we're trying to get. So that flexibility and ability to see the situations where something unexpected happens, or in that uncertainty to function, that's beauty.
Yeah, and I can see I can see your excitement in your voice when you talk about these topics, leadership in company culture. I want to get you into, because you're talking about leadership and showing up as a leader to our people. As you know, Inge, currently me and my co-author Cristobal working on our second book, Perform in Times of Crisis, and I'm actually working on a chapter. There you go. That's the first one. You got a signed copy. Lucky you.
So good. I am impressed how much
thank work you. Thank you. So we're working on the second book right now, Perform in Times of Crisis. I'm writing a chapter that's connected to mastering your mental state and keeping your team's emotional temperature down in times of crisis, but specifically interested to begin with the mastering your mental state. A leader has the responsibility to take care of themselves to a level that when a difficult situation happens, unexpected circumstances, emergencies, they can remain into a mental state in which they're actually able to do something, right? It's okay to be emotional. It's okay that we're humans and you might be stressed and overwhelmed, but what are you going to do about it? So my question to you is, and there's two parts of it. My questions to you is, first of all, what do you do or what do you recommend leaders to do to be in a good mental state, like preventatively? Like what kind of habits, what kind of things do you recommend people to do so they're in a good state before a crisis happens? And then the second part, what do you do when there's an emergency so you can get into this better mental state so you can actually be in a solution mode?
To answer your first question about how you train your own mental state is a simple exercise as writing. It's very, very helpful. That inner dialogue, what we start understanding ourselves better, that's a key. To be aware what we are in different states and what are those states. But also know what we have lots of power and agency to change that. Not necessarily maybe it's going to happen in that particular second, but maybe through a few breaths, knowing what's important, we can train ourselves to transition. And then for athletes and leaders, I use the same technique when we define in this dial-up scale, when we, how much energy or stress do we have? Is it 9? Is it 10? Is it 12? Or is it 5? Or is it 1, right? Sometimes 1 means like you're completely burned. It's not like you don't care anymore, especially if something that's meaningful what you do, but you burned out completely, like you're... emotional capacity is completely fried. So accepting, but this is where I'm at. It's okay. This is how my body is reacting. I'm not freaking out about it, about my state, right? So this is what first training goes with, accepting where we're at and honestly defining where we're at. And then it's like, what I'm gonna do with this? Sometimes it's okay to cancel maybe the meeting, but sometimes we can try different techniques, right, to see how to get there where we need to be. And also knowing at this situation, at what kind of dial I need to be. So for good meetings, what would be your dial? For maybe important presentations from scale from 0 to 10, what kind of stress level you would like to feel where you feel like you do your best work?
I don't know, 5, 6.
Okay. So you can test it out to see what if I need to be at 5, 6. Before that, where I'm at? Am I 7? Am I 9? So then I need to bring down by 2 scales down. Okay, what would be those techniques?
By the way, when I mean stress level 5 or 6, it's more excitement maybe. Like I don't want to be fully peaceful and like I want to be a little bit more fired up. That's what I call stress. I don't call stress like I'm overwhelmed and It's off
very,
track.
very good distinction what you just said. Actually, stress or excitement is the same thing. It's energy. It's accelerated energy. Emotion is energy in motion. So how you define the situation, if it is something where you feel like you have capabilities and confidence to go in, you will define it as excitement. If you have some fear what you're going to fail in this situation, you will define it as a threat and a stress. But it's the same energy level. It's only how you see the situation and yourself in that situation.
Yeah, and by the way, again, I'm working on the chapter now. Anybody who's listening probably going to read something completely different 3 or 4 months from now. but currently, talking about preparing yourself to be capable, right? Like to have the mental toughness to take on difficult and stressful situations. I'm talking a lot about in the chapter about mental fitness. And to me, it's fascinating how much people care about physical fitness, right? Like, you know that you have to exercise in order to train your body, in order for it to look good and to be healthy. Okay, great. But what about your mind? What do you do on a daily basis to nurture your mind? Physical exercise helps, right? The food we eat, sleep, all these kind of things, they help a lot. They help. There's so many studies that show the... But also, what do you do to flex your mind, to nurture your mind? What kind of books do you read? What kind of podcasts do you listen to? What interviews do you feed your mind? Interviews with successful people in your area. What kind of people do you have in your corner, right? Like the friends that you have.
I would challenge one more level. I don't know if maybe you even present it now. And what do you do with that information? Because now I see people over consuming so much information, but don't do anything. It goes like from me and meow, meow.
I love it. That's it. That's a solid
what
point.
Do you do? Like, how does that transfer to your diversifying your behaviors, right? And this is what we do, and this is why coaching, and again, I'm so biased about this coaching, but please tell me if it is something better than that kind of relationship to change and to improve, and then I will stop. But in the sessions, we literally, and this is why I tested out, and what I teach leaders how to also approach their employees is like, what's the next step of how can we do better? Do you believe in this step? What's preventing you to take this step? What would be the next exercise? How can I support you in creating the new behavior habit? And then we literally define, okay, next time in the meeting, I will try to ask more questions. Next time in before that saying something, I will take 3 breaths. Next time when I feel like really agitated, I will have literally a note in front of me where I am just going to take a pause and not do anything. But again, we create those exercise patterns. And then what's really important is to come back and to like seal it. It's like, this is what went well. This is still needs some improvement. What would be those exercises? So this is how exactly in a gym, what happens when you train your muscle, right? Like you don't go to the bar with 200 kilos to lift it right away. Like you come in, it's like, oh, no way. And you will injure right away. But okay, you just first learn the movement with the bar. Okay, it's getting better. Now I start seeing how energy flows and it's quite easy for me and definitely can do it. Okay, more plates on top of it. Let's do it. So this incremental steps of training ourselves is exactly the same in what we learn, how to negotiate, how to say no, how to quit, how to stop, how to start our new actions. It's like maybe sometimes even we practice with family members in the beginning, whatever we feel like we can start seeing ourselves doing that new movement, new action.
I couldn't agree anymore on the coaching and getting somebody in your corner once again that's a professional that will ask you the right questions, will listen attentively, see if there are some certain things you might need to address, but not telling you what to do, but helping you to get clear what you want to do And when it comes to crisis management, being prepared, having your tools, not, you know, the crisis happens. Okay, what should I do now? What should I do now? Like, well, maybe you could have those tools and ideas and stuff prepared. So when something happens, you know how to get back into your zone. And in that perspective, I'm actually curious, what do you do? I mean, you're probably going through difficult situations as well, like every human being, right? And do you have any kind of a personal toolbox of, I don't know, I stopped and I closed my eyes and breathe for 2 minutes, or like, what are your tools to remain calm in difficult situations?
Go back to basics. And this is what coach always was telling me when I would start freaking out during the competitions, what I don't understand what I'm doing, nothing, I'm not feeling my body, nothing is going well. And then he literally says, go back to basics. In the big situations, already adrenaline level is so high. So you doing the basic, it's already gonna show the highest level. So this is what we also define what it means to push, right? Sometimes to push means to be more relaxed. And this is what they're gonna drive you to the best results. Sometimes to push, it means to be quiet for a few minutes. And going back to basics is literally to seeing what this situation requires and what is the most important one, two things to do. Like if I will have this position for my javelin, everything else will be fine. I will be able to manage, control things. It's like when Olympic situation happens, basic, okay, human beings are suffering, right? So how can I assist that? And then I will find a way how to manage whole situation. But again, like really defining for that moment, what is the basic thing? What is the most important thing? And stop to do, to manage that. That's what you can do the most in the crisis. It's nothing extra. It's nothing more. It's less, but more precision.
Beautiful. What a great way to wrap up this episode, Inga. What would be your final message to the audience of Productivity Mastery listening, you know, peak performers, high achievers, people want to get a lot out of life?
It's a very interesting question. And in understanding and accepting who you are, it is enough. And to see what drives you, is it driving you from the fear-based or from abundance, from the love? It's very hard concepts, but this is what creates healthier decisions and more stable decisions, right? Like, am I creating the business because I'm afraid or because I feel like I can bring more value? It's the same drive, but completely different source. How we're gonna approach the failure? How we're gonna approach perfectionism? Because there's many types of perfectionism. One is a fear of failure. Another one is striving for the better. Right. So avoiding failure or striving for the better. It all comes from that source, and it comes from how much you accept yourself, how you are now. Not whom you wish to be. I know it's not really an easy concept for the morning motivation, but I like precision. I like going to the core, and I love challenging myself and my clients. And this is what they said they appreciate from me. So you're welcome.
Well, thank you so much, Inga. Just for the audience who's listening now and maybe excited to get in touch, where could people get in touch with you? And if they need any support in their corner, who are the kind of people that you serve and how do you serve them?
You can find me and easily connect through LinkedIn by going to my feed, by my messages, and I support ambitious leaders who really curious and interested, how can they do maybe differently or maybe easier, maybe better, whatever they are already doing, because they are already successful professionals with whom I work. So we learn how to better use to go to another levels, all those powers and superpowers what we have.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Inge, for being with us, for sharing all these insights and inspiring stories and tools. And thanks, everybody, for listening to yet another episode of Productivity Mastery. Make sure to subscribe to Productivity Mastery on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and any other major podcast platform. Keep sending us messages with your thoughts and insights. We love them. You know, really drives us. This is the gas in our tank to keep on going, and gives us a lot of smiles. So yeah, have an amazing day and keep performing. Thank you guys for listening. Make sure to subscribe to my monthly newsletter by visiting stoyanyankov.com, and also learn about the Perform methodology and the Perform book, as well as our various personal and team coaching offers. Stay tuned and keep performing.